So, how long have you been working with clay and sculpting?
I started in 1965 working with clay, but the raku process, which we are known for, we discovered that about 25 years ago, just by accident, really. We went to get some clay from a clay seller, suppliers, and we just saw a group of people having a really good time with lots of smoke and flames, and we thought, what's that? It's very exciting. So we went and had a look, and it was raku, and we've been
Excellent.
doing it ever since.
Fantastic. And you before the clay, you've been involved with art sort of all your life, haven't you? What
I've
was
been drawing, yeah, ever since I could pick a pencil up, basically. Or actually, in my case, it was a chalk. I had a little blackboard and a piece of chalk in the
excellent.
corner drawing. So drawing is one of my great loves, yeah.
That's fantastic. So when what sort of made you decide to go from drawing into the sculpture sort of thing?
It's sort of, I like working with clay. I like gardening, and I like my hands in the soil and just getting dirty, basically. So drawing is it's like another side of drawing. I draw with clay and I follow the lines, and that's how I do my pieces. I look at all the lines and I turn it until I get it right.
Excellent, excellent. Okay. Now, the clay that you use, it's not just clay, is it? Could you talk a little bit about what it is and
Yes. Well, we use paper clay. Peter mixes it up. Peter, my husband, mixes it up. And what it is basically is a clay slip with paper pulp, and we also put some sand or grog in the mix, and it's all mixed up. And that gives it a very good strength for building large pieces without armatures. You can dry it. It can dry out completely. And you can still work on it without any cracks or problems. You just have to wet the edges quite well. But it stands up, and as it dries out, you can keep going. But you
Okay.
have to be careful about the shrinkages, because you can get different shrinkages, so you have to bear that in mind.
Okay, so when
Yeah.
you're sort of building it, like the different sort of proportions of things and
As you go along, one end is drying out and shrinking, so you need to do the other end, the wet end, a little bit bigger, taking in account that that's going to shrink,
Okay,
so I have to get it
I'm with you.
right.
So you only use that type of clay, don't you? You don't use sort of the normal type of clay,
I
or?
use the normal type of clay for smaller pieces, because the smaller pieces I tend to do solid. I
Okay.
carve them out, whereas the bigger pieces, because of the size, you know, if it was solid, it'd be so heavy. So the paper clay, it's really fantastic material, and you can do really big pieces. Your only limit is the kiln size,
Yeah, okay.
so you have to bear that in
I'm
mind.
with you. So the hollow ones with the paper clay because it's a bit more solid,
Yes,
and
because they're
then.
big, and it allows you to go very big but light.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay. So what sort of tools do you use when you're sculpting your various pieces?
Basically, you use anything you can lay your hands on, all sorts of anything. Credit cards are very good, excellent,
Okay.
because you can cut them into form, you know, points, straight, round edges, anything,
Okay.
and they are very good. And sunglasses, old sunglasses, the lenses,
All right,
they're
okay.
excellent because they got very complex shapes around the edges, and they're good for burnishing as well.
Burnishing?
Burnishing is just solidifying the clay to make a silk sheen on it.
Oh,
It's
okay.
beautiful.
And you can be, something that surprised me was how firm you can be with the clay as well, because you literally.
Yes, you can really bash it. Paper clay is it's very strong, and you can bash it to make it strengthen up, and it compresses on itself, and you can sort of rough it up later on, wet it, and go again. And it just keeps going. It's brilliant.
Excellent. So it's pretty much kind of with tools and things. There's no sort of real professional tools. It's more kind of.
There are professional tools, but they're quite expensive. But if you go around the boot sale, you can keep an eye on all sorts of kitchen tools. Anything basically
Kitchen
is a
tools.
tool.
Excellent. I
Yes.
like
Yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know you're working on a specific piece at the moment.
Yeah.
I'd love it if you could just sort of talk me through, sort of from the beginning,
From the
the
beginning.
idea, the concept of it,
Right.
through to, I know you haven't quite finished it yet, but sort of
Yeah.
how you get to the end.
Well, I'm I'm doing an American pit bull for Tor Abbey Contemporary Open. I'm going to submit it. It doesn't mean to say it's going to be in it. and I'm doing it because it's the exhibition is called Tamed, and my thread is we've tamed the wild dog and we've bred it into all different breeds for the use of man. But now it's become a problem. In London, it's more of a weapon dog. People are breeding it to be aggressive towards humans. So it's sort of come full circle and gone a bit pear-shaped. So I'm doing that.
So coming up with the idea was kind of because of the fact there was a theme tamed. So that sort of led you to the...
Well, the theme tamed, I've got several projects I want to do. So I more or less wanted to do the American pit bull, so I thought I could fit that in.
Ah, okay.
And tie it in.
I'm with you.
Slightly.
Okay, so you've got your idea. You know what you want to do.
Yeah.
What's the first step?
The first step is, we have a turntable, which is basically what you put under a television. You know the thing
mm-hmm.
that you turn.
Yeah.
A turntable with a board, and then you get a sausage of your paper clay, and you do an outline on the board
mm-hmm.
and then you start, you can do scaffolding or you can build it up with tubes. I made two tubes for the front legs
mm-hmm.
and lots of sheets. I rolled out lots of sheets of paper clay and dried them out, firmed them up a little bit, and when they firm up you can model them up the side, you can do the back of the piece quite quickly, you can shape it, you can put tubes of scaffolding up or whatever, but it's pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a tube shape, you can go up quite a long way and it's firm.
Mm-hmm. So whilst you're sculpting then, in this case, what are you actually working from?
A picture.
Okay.
I got a book from a boot sale quite a couple of years ago, and it's American Pit Bulls, and there's a lovely picture of a dog chained up with a lovely expression on its face,
mm-hmm.
resigned to being chained up all day, doing absolutely nothing until somebody comes and takes you for a walk. And I'm trying to get that expression on his face. It looks very dignified
okay.
with this huge chain on him, padlock.
I like it.
But doesn't it? He looks dangerous, but his expression isn't.
I'm with it.
I want to go walkies. I don't know that I've succeeded on that. We're still working on it, but he does look good at the moment.
So in this case, like you say, you're working off a photo. Is there times then that you might work from a different sort of angle of things? Or?
If I get a commission, I tend to like to see the dog because the owner is wanting something that represents the dog. So if somebody wants me to do a commission, I'll ask for some photographs and do some sketches. But then they bring the dog along and I see the dog in movement. And I tend to treat it as a project and do several of the dog, and then the owner comes and see which one they actually want.
I'm with you, okay.
If I'm lucky, they'll buy two. Which is brilliant.
So you've sculpted your dog, you've got your scaffolding on and your whatever, and then sort of, where do you go from there then?
Well, once it's dry and it's supporting itself, you can actually cut the scaffolding off. You can hacksaw paper clay, you know, if it's too hard, you can hacksaw it and repair the damage.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, the paper clay is a white clay, so I've put a terracotta slip over it. The dog I want to do is a brindle, which is brown and black, mottly, sort of stripy dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I put terracotta slip on top, and then I put copper oxide on it in patchy. And sort of slapped it, and he's looking pretty good.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
And I've done the collar,
mm-hmm.
and I'm starting on the chain. So the chain is going to be a nightmare to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But,
okay, so you've done all that. So then, at what point then is it the kiln next then that it goes into?
It has to dry out quite well before it goes in the kiln. So we let it dry out for quite a while, really. And the kiln we've got is a very old kiln, so it goes up 40 degrees an hour, so it doesn't exactly go up very fast, so it never cracks anything, it just chunters away.
Mm.
quietly, drying it out and firing it at the same time. We fire 2,000 degrees.
2,000 degrees?
To 8,000 degrees.
To 1,000. I was going to say 2,000.
1,000 degrees, yeah.
Okay, how long does it stay in the kiln for at that heat?
It's an overnight firing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it could be 12 hours more.
Is that as
it's an electric kiln, that one.
Ah, right. Yes. Ah, okay.
Yes, that's a sort of bisque firing. Mm-hmm. Like bisque is like flower pots. You get the raw clay.
And so when you say it's 12 hours, is that as in from zero temperature all the way up to 1,000 to peak and then back again? Or
you just take it to the peak and then you switch it off, and then it'll take ages to cool down because it has to contract.
Excellent. And then once it's out the kiln, is that job done? Or
No. Yeah, once it's out of the kiln, you can do all sorts of things to it then. And I tend to hope, fingers crossed, that it's okay. But you can touch it up with colour afterwards, and you can polish it as well.
Okay.
And wax boot polish is very good, black or brown or any colour you like, really. You
just can to shine it up?
To give it a little shine.
Okay.
Not a glossy, it's a very nice satin shine.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a patina, you know, like people have touched it for years.
Ah, really? Yeah. Oh, very nice. Okay. Where do you actually get your clay from?
Well, most of it we get from recycled.
Excellent.
A lot of it we get from foundries or factories and studio potters, because they haven't got time, or time is money to a studio potter, and they haven't got time to reconstitute it. We have a pug mill, and Peter reconstitutes the clay.
What's a pug mill, sorry?
Well, it's a machine that you put dry, moist clay in, and it's sort of like a corkscrew.
Oh, okay.
And pushes it out into a sausage form where it's all reconstituted.
Which
saves a lot of work.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, it comes to us in bags of dry, maybe full of bits and pieces, latex mainly, from gloves and mould material. But if you can get all those impurities out and you put it through the pug mill, then that's the recycled side of it. But commissions, we buy new.
So with the commissions and things, we've got one in front of us here, which is, we mentioned briefly, very briefly earlier, this technique called raku.
Yeah, raku has come, it's an ancient sort of method really from Japan, and it's closely tied to the tea ceremony. And it's a method of firing where you raise the temperature of the piece to 1,000 degrees, and it's a glazing sort of firing. And the glaze, at 1,000 degrees, the glaze melts. And the reason you know it's raised to temperature is you can shine a torch in the hole in the top of the kiln. And when you put it in, it's a powder. But when it's at 1,000 degrees, it shines back like it's wet.
Ah.
So that's how you know that the glaze is melted.
Okay.
It shines back like it's wet.
Okay.
The piece is wet. So Peter takes the lid off the kiln, which is quite a scary thing to do. So he does that, and he removes a piece from the kiln with tongs. When it comes out, it's glowing red, and the glaze is like toffee, it's molten.
Mm-hmm.
So when it reaches the air, it tends to craze. The air touches the glaze, and it solidifies, and it starts to crack. The piece is very hot, so it's gonna crack a lot. I come along and spray it with water, and that crazes it more. And then we put it into a bucket of sawdust, and that's called a reduction chamber. So you put it in the sawdust and put a lid on the bucket.
I like the fancy
it.
Name. So it's a bucket of sawdust,
it's a reduction chamber.
A reduction chamber, I like that.
You put the lid on, so you starve in it of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
The piece is very hot and it wants to burn the sawdust. So it takes oxygen out of the glaze. The glaze is tin oxide or whatever, copper oxide. So then it takes that out, and then sometimes you can have a copper, it's covered in copper.
Mm-hmm.
And if you let oxygen back into the chamber, you get all sort of colours, pretty colours, like oil on water. You get all
fantastic.
The colours of the rainbow. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
But this one is tin, and you tend to get the tin on the top. But that sort of floats off, and you get a really nice white glaze. And the other thing that the reduction chamber does, it turns the terracotta black, and then where it's crazed the glaze, you see the black crazing.
Mm-hmm.
If you get close, when you spray in it, if you get close to the piece, you can get intensive crazing. And if it's raining, you can get little spots of intensive crazing. And each piece has to be individually sprayed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're spraying it, you don't actually know what's going to happen because you can't see it. So you have to wait.
Yeah.
Because on a cold day, it will craze beautifully. And if I spray it with water, you can end up with too much crazing.
I'm with you.
So you have to bear in mind the temperature of the day if the wind is blowing.
Oh.
And on a hot day, it might not craze. So you've got to go out on a hot day, you've got to really spray it.
So it's a pretty scary moment putting something that you've made then into the kiln and the spray.
It is a bit. Because they do crack. Nature of the beast.
Yeah.
When you get it out, that's it. Mm-hmm. Because if you put it in, you can fire it again.
Okay.
If you're not happy. But you won't get that. If you like the crazing,
mm-hmm.
you've got to stick with it.
Because that changes every single time.
That's what Raku's about. It means enjoyment.
Oh, does it?
It does,
okay.
Yeah. And it's this Zen thing, you know, here and now. And you appreciate what's in front of you.
That's a very nice concept.
Yeah.
You mentioned then about Peter, your husband, who is into sculpting and things as well. And
yeah.
he's the kiln work and things for you with your
Raku. He does
the
heavy work and the kiln work. And
so it's sort of working. Do you work together a lot then? Or is it just kind of you have your own individual projects and you don't really try and get into each other's way? Or?
Yeah, we don't. Peter's a lot more untidy in the workshop than I am. And we're very different. Pete's from a technical background and he's very much measuring things and, you know, working out precisely. I'm more, you know, just slap it on and if it's wrong, alter it.
I'm really
hit it in the right place. But we're very different. But the firing, Pete does the firings. He does all the kiln stuff.
So is there anything that you still particularly in your mind you haven't sculpted yet and you really want to? Like,
there's lots. Yeah. I've done a lot of horses, but I really would like to do two horses fighting.
Oh,
I think that would be quite a challenging thing. Mm-hmm. I also want to do two men fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know quite how I do that. You know, half size. If you do a piece half size, it's actually a quarter volume. So, you know, you could do it half size, all the measurements,
mm-hmm.
and end up with something quite manageable.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. I would tend to do that.
Excellent.
But horses, there's a lot of mileage there to do, yes. And I'd like to do a greyhound.
A greyhound, okay.
A greyhound would be really nice to do.
So with the fighting horse.
Oh, a rhinoceros.
Oh, a rhinoceros. Yeah.
Their faces and the horns, you know, it's just asking to be done. So, yeah.
Excellent. So, those sort of things then, I suppose. Well, maybe with the people, would you possibly think about getting people to pose for photos and things like that
you'd
to start with? Or?
You'd have to get people to pose because it's such a long process.
Mm-hmm.
You could do drawings and take photographs, but at the end of the day, you need to see people in the pose and you'd have to have them in life. But we have a table that turns around and we take pictures in the round, just to keep taking pictures from all angles.
Okay.
But there's only a certain amount you can do from pictures.
Mm-hmm.
The life model is, you know, invaluable.
Absolutely.
Really.
Okay. So all the work that you do then, where can people see it and buy it and get in touch with you to do commissions or things like that?
The only gallery I'm in is the Slack Stevenson Gallery in Brixham,
mm-hmm.
which is where Nikki Stevenson's gallery, she's an artist, and that's in Brixham. We do markets. There's the Dartmouth Art Weekend
mm-hmm.
in June. That's on 19th and 20th of June, the Dartmouth Art Weekend, in aid of the Children's Hospice, and that's in the gardens, and it's just a lot of artists and craft people
mm-hmm.
demonstrating what they do and selling. And it's a really nice atmosphere.
So do you have your own stall there? Or is
it's a gazebo and you take your own table and you set up in the garden by the bandstand and it's, you know, if the sun is shining.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
It's a beautiful, and it's a weekend, it's nice.
And then hopefully as well you'll have a piece at the And the Tor Abbey.
And hopefully Diesel will get into Tor Abbey.
Diesel the pit bull.
Diesel the pit bull.
Excellent. Okay, so I know that you've kind of, you came from your drawing backgrounds and you've never really had any, you've kind of just self-taught.
Self-taught.
Everything.
Yeah, everything self-taught. But a lot of our information has been learned through associations, potters associations.
Mm-hmm.
And the local one is the West Country Potters. So if anybody wants to know anything about pottery, join the West Country Potters Association. And that's www.westcountrypotters.co.uk.
Excellent.
It's a good website. But if they want to see the work of the West Country Potters, they've got an exhibition of members' work at Saltram House all through the summer.
Oh, excellent. So
if they want to see the...
Whereabouts is Saltram House?
It's near Plymouth. It's a National Trust house near Plymouth.
And there'll be information about that on the website you just
Yes, said, go to the website or Saltram House will have it. And it's all right through the summer.
Okay, and is so the West Country Potters Association then, do they have, when you join, is it sort of they have meets and things like that? Or?
Yes, they have workshop visits to studios of other potters and they're very open with their information and answer questions, straightforward. And you learn a lot, a tremendous lot, just by seeing the studio and seeing how they do it. The West Country Potters do social firing, okay. Which is raku firing and pit firing and smoke firing. There's an awful lot of different firings. They get together at somebody's farm and you get a group of people and then everybody's interested in different things and trying out different things. So it's very good.
That's
very sociable.
Yeah,
very sociable.
That sounds very nice. So that's with West Country Potters
yes,
Association,
that's right.
Which was
www.westcountrypotters.co.uk.
Okay, well, thank you very much for taking
that's
this time
right.
to talk to me. It's very, very interesting, and hopefully, people listening then can log on to that website and,
well,
and
yes,
get involved.
Definitely. If you think you might like pottery, because it's very exciting. Modern ceramics is really exciting. So West Country Potters is the first step.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Vera.
Okay. Thank you, John.